Okay, our fall session is starting September 7th, and it goes to November 9th. And it's $95 for the book and every session. That's 10 sessions. And you can go to their website. Don't forget, wordandlife.us is our website. Now, we need to give a heartfelt thanks to Dave for a wonderful May series. And I want to give you a little teaser about what's coming next May. You know, he comes every May. Next May, he's going to be talking about his new book, and it's on cosmic spirituality, a mystical vision of Teilhard de Chardin. That's next May, so keep that in your calendar. All right, Dave, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do we have some questions left over from before? And by the way, the card I passed around has a little prayer that you can use daily, and it's regarding my book called The Five Longings. And we still have some of these more cosmic style of morning offerings, so we're on the back table if anybody didn't get one. Harriet?
There was a part of, I think it was in the section on Mystical Rose, and you wrote about being transcendent, cosmic, and one other thing. I forget.
Personal.
But I didn't understand what the difference was between transcendent and cosmic. I mean, in a way, it seems like if you transcend...
Transcending your own ego.
Okay.
And then starting to include the whole universe in your sense of yourself.
So one follows the other?
Yeah, one opens up into the other.
Thank you.
Okay, yes. Dave talked me into this, by the way. Because I had a question in this particular chapter. There's the references to all of the appearances of Mary in the United States. Well, all the appearances of Mary. And they're very negative, and they're very punishing. If you don't pray this and do that, my son will be very angry with you. And I learned all these when I was in grammar school and a little bit in high school, and it destroyed my image of Mary. So I didn't think about her, wouldn't pray to her, nothing for most of my life, and then about 12 or 13 years ago, I went to an interested persons meeting at La Casa for the McLeod community, and Juliet Toomey gave a presentation on Mary that absolutely broke my heart, because I realized that for most of my life I had, because of the stories I had heard, I totally denied and did not accept Mary or the feminine. So I don't know that that's a question, but it is a statement, and that little piece was in the book, and I found it very, like, oh, yes, it totally relates to my life.
Thank you, Kitty. So you found her again, and she also found you. So. We can never trust the Divine Mother enough. There's always more. So the next title is The House of Gold, and you see that this fits with the idea of the vessel of alchemy, which produces the gold. And I have my quote here from St. Teresa of Avila. Consider our soul to be like a castle made entirely of diamonds with many rooms. If this castle is the soul, clearly one does not have to enter it, since it is already within us. That's the whole point of everything we've been talking about. It isn't dualistic. It isn't that we're down here praying to Mary up in the sky. You're making contact with the depth of your own soul, which also is reflected in the universe around you. If you think of it that way, having a round look instead of a a linear sense that we're down here and somebody's up there who could help us. And then she says, how foolish it would seem if we were to tell someone to enter a room he was already in. If you get the idea. Okay. And this title comes from the first book of Kings. He overlaid the whole house with gold, referring to Solomon's temple, in order that the whole house might be perfect. So the gold is the symbol of the higher self. The next one is one we've already started talking about. That's the Ark of the Covenant, the Shekinah. And it contains the divine presence. It is feminine. And we read about it in the book of Hebrews. In it stood the golden altar of incense and the Ark of the Covenant, overlaid on all sides with gold, in which there were a golden urn holding the manna and Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant. The ark was made of incorruptible wood, a symbol of the deathless self, higher self, God within. And it tells us, or it shows us, the feminine presence of God. And Book of Revelation. Then God's, and now I'm on page 102, third paragraph. Then God's temple in heaven was opened, and the Ark of His covenant was seen within this temple. It's the container of the divine, just as your mother's womb was the container of you. So you began in the feminine container, and at the end of your life, when you go into the grave dug in Mother Earth, you will go back into the container of the feminine again. So our whole life happens between the two feminine containers, and the container has as its purpose not to hold you back from growing. It's the place where you gestate, where you do grow. So in your mother's womb, you were growing over those 9 months. And in our religious tradition, when you're in the grave, you are, shall we say, growing toward resurrection. So that's the concept of this. The next one is the gate of heaven. Mary is the gate of heaven, the way into heaven. And I'm on page 104. A gate or a door is a symbol of a passage into a new world or a new state of consciousness. So notice how all of these titles are metaphors. So it's not referring to an actual gate. It's referring to the deeper meaning of a gate, which is an opening into a new kind of existence. And this particular quote is from the book of Genesis. And it's said, this is the statement by Jacob. First of all, he had a dream in which he saw a ladder, and angels were going up the ladder from earth to heaven and down the ladder from heaven to earth. In other words, the divine connects mortal and immortal. And when he woke up the next morning, this is what he said: "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God and the gate of heaven." Two titles then given to Mary. And notice what he says. How awesome is this place, but the place is the whole planet, not just that one spot in the Holy Land. Everybody follow? So how awesome is this place is what you would say in nature. When you have that sense of awe, that's the equivalent of appreciating the divine feminine, because you're cluing into the awesome wonder of Mother Nature. So when he says, "This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven," and Teilhard de Chardin uses this quote to describe his sense of the evolving universe as the best place to house the divine and the best access into the world beyond this one. So, and also when you saw the angels, it's the theme of ascent and descent. So you're going from the ego world to the world of the divine, and you're going from the divine down to the ego's world. And I wanted to share this lovely other thought, which is, I'm on 106, third paragraph. "Gold and precious metals represent spiritual meaning. In Herod's temple in Jerusalem, the central gates to the city were covered with gold. And there's one gate that's called the Beautiful Gate that was covered with brass. And here, while that gate was open, St. Peter was at that gate and he cured someone who was crippled. The crippled man begged him for money. He said, "I don't have silver or gold, but what I do have, I will give you. In the name of Jesus of Nazareth, arise and walk." He cured him of his lameness. An open gate is significant as the symbol of the entry into the temple of divine life. And there is a touching and provocative legend that the parents of Mary, Joachim and Anna, met and fell in love at this beautiful gate. The next one is the Morning Star, and this is the one associated with Star of the Sea. It refers to a quote from Second Letter of St. Peter: "Until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts." So it isn't just the morning star rising in the sky. We want the morning star to rise in our hearts. Once again, it's a metaphor for what's inside of us. Like all of these titles, they're showing us the topography of our own souls. Last time I mentioned the famous Latin novel called The Golden Ass by Apuleius. And he became a priest of the goddess Isis, the mother goddess of Egypt. And I just want to quote this very lovely prayer that he says. And notice how this prayer could be said to Mary also. "O Holy Blessed Lady, constant comfort to humankind, your compassion nourishes us all. you care about those in trouble as a loving mother for her children. You are there when we call, stretching out your hand to push aside anything that might harm us. You even untangle the web of fate in which we might be caught. You would even stop the stars for us if their pattern was in any way harmful. Can you imagine having that kind of faith in the divine feminine? Of course, they were believers in astrology. He's saying, if the astrological picture was negative, you would switch it around to become positive. All of these quotations coming from other traditions, they show you that there's always been this strong trust and faith in the divine feminine. And I also wanted to give a quote from one of Shakespeare's plays. It's called Pericles. And it has in this play, the characters are on a ship which is being tossed in a terrible storm. And the character in the play calls upon the Divine Mother, Star of the Sea, the protector of sailors. And it's a lovely quote. I'm on 110. O divinest patroness and midwife gentle to those who cry by night, convey thy deity aboard our dancing boat. Boat was shaking, dancing. So he's calling upon the Divine Mother, and he's calling her the midwife. You're the midwife. You're the one who brings us to a new kind of birth. Remember in our childhood we had that very sentimental song? Mother dear, oh pray for me, while far from heaven and thee. What's the next line? Oh, we wander in a fragile bark on life's tempestuous sea. So that's a reference to this same title. The next one is Health of the Sick. And the word health in Latin is salus, which also refers to salvation. So you turn to Mary as a healing force. And the interesting thing is that devotion to Mary throughout the centuries has led people to want to be healers themselves. So she's the one who shows you who you are. She doesn't just say, well, I'm the healer, so come to me. You're the one who needs healing. She draws you to her so you can find healing powers in yourself. And it's even a calling, as we said at the beginning. In the Hindu religion, there's a famous saint, Ramakrishna, and he was known for his very strong devotion to the Mother Goddess in the Hindu world. And in his diary, I'm on page 115, last paragraph, in his diary, he says that he was close to suicide at this particular moment when he suddenly had this powerful vision. And now I quote what he said. Suddenly the Blessed Mother revealed herself. That's Kali, where we get the word Calcutta, Mother Goddess. Suddenly the Blessed Mother revealed herself, and everything else vanished from my sight, leaving no trace whatsoever. And in their stead, I saw a limitless, infinite, effulgent ocean of consciousness. As far as my eye could see, the shining billows were madly rushing at me from all sides. So he saw the Mother at the moment in which he was in despair, and she gave him hope because he saw the bigness of the Divine Mother. She's the infinite effulgent ocean. And then he finally says, whatever is the Mother. What a mystical comment. So he realized, the entire reality of my life and of this whole universe has a motherly dimension. And when I'm in despair, I just don't notice it. But the Mother wouldn't allow him not to notice her. She appeared and she showed herself. And finally, in this section on page 116, I have this very interesting quotation from the Dalai Lama. He says, I visited Lourdes, healing place that is sacred to the Virgin Mary. I visited Lourdes last year as a pilgrim. There in front of the cave where she appears to St. Bernadette, I experienced something very special. I felt a spiritual vibration. Remember, this is coming from a Buddhist. I felt a spiritual vibration, a kind of spiritual presence. And then in front of the image of the Virgin Mary, I prayed. I expressed my admiration for this holy place that has long been a source of inspiration and strength to so many people, that provided spiritual solace, comfort, and healing. And I prayed that this might continue for a long time to come. Isn't that beautiful? And the other day on TV, I saw a little article on the news that every year veterans gather at Lourdes for a conference. And since World War II, the Knights of Columbus have made it possible, when you're in a war situation, at the end, soldiers, they are welcome to have a visit to Lourdes before they go home. Visit the Divine Mother, Queen of Peace, after all you've been through. Powerful. The next title is Refuge of Sinners. And of course, it's one of the most beautiful and hopeful of all the titles. The mystery of the divine is that it makes all well in the end by never giving up on us. Refuge of sinners, the divine never gives up on the human. No matter what you have done, it's somehow forgivable as long as you're willing to turn toward the forgiveness. And I have a quote in here from Henri de Lubac, that's a famous Catholic theologian. And in his book called Aspects of Buddhism, he said, I'm on 118 at the bottom, if I accept the unique except, E-X-C-E-P-T, if I eliminate the unique fact of the incarnation, where we adore the trace and presence of God, Buddhism is probably the great spiritual event in history, because it emphasizes the concept of refuge. So we have Mary as the refuge of sinners, and in Buddhism, no matter what is happening to you, you have three refuges. This part, F-U-G-E in Latin, means flight. And the first part, R-E, means back to flee back to the place where it's safe. That's refuge. So in Buddhism, there are three. You can go to the Buddha consciousness in yourself. In other words, you can take refuge in the part of you that is already enlightened. Even though your ego gets in the way, there's always that enlightened dimension of you. Secondly, you can go to the Dharma, which are the teachings themselves, so full of wisdom. And third, you can go to the Sangha, to the community of other practitioners around you, the people who are trying to help you. So instead of the three refuges being donuts, black coffee, and a cigarette, they look like this. Any questions as we're going along? So I'm on 120 and I'm in the third paragraph. To pray to Mary as refuge of sinners is not just a consolation. Oh good, she always forgives me. I thought this in childhood. I looked at all those statues and I thought the only one who loves me no matter what I do is Mary. And of course, I was referring to the Divine Feminine. I didn't understand at the time. To pray to Mary as refuge of sinners is not just a consolation. Excuse me. It's a way of noticing and honoring the Great Mother who contains us unconditionally in sin and in grace. We do not have to measure up before she will love us. We measure up because she loves us. We already measure up because she loves us. So when you have that sense of being loved by Mary, it does a lot for your spiritual self-esteem. Loved by Mary, what does that mean? Not loved by the woman who walked around in Israel. Loved by the great mother spirit in this entire universe and in ourselves. She's also called Comforter of the Troubled. And again, you can see how this would be a calling to us. We're here to comfort the troubled. It's the first of what are called the spiritual works of mercy that we learned in our childhood. Comfort the troubled. Counsel the confused. Provide information to those who need it. Speak up to the unjust. Speak truth to power. Forgive injuries. Bear wrongs without retaliation and pray for the living and the dead. And each of these works of mercy is a challenge to undo some form of oppression in our society. Think of it that way. Think of it as having something to do with everything that's happening around us, everything we see on the news. This is our faith is not about how do we get off planet so we can get to heaven. It's how can we do all we can do while we're here with all the resources of grace that we've been given, the greatest of which is the Comforter of the Troubled, which is in the Divine Feminine. And of course, this, like all the archetypes and like all these titles, has a dark side. The dark side of... I'm on 124, third paragraph. The dark side of being a helper and a healer, it has to do with how you could think of yourself as above the victims. Like I'm up here and I'm all set and they're the ones who need me. Instead of, I'm this too. At times I'm victimized. At times I'm incapacitated. My compassion is happening because I'm one with everybody, not because I'm up here looking down on them. I remember a quotation from a spiritual book I read in the seminary. You've heard the expression, "There but for the grace of God go I." And this author said, we should change that. It should be, there by the grace of God go I. Like I'm one with everybody who's in some type of, having some type of issue that requires healings. And then on page 126, second paragraph, we admire certain saints, and there's more than others. And there's a reason for this. It's because they represent and personify our own untapped potential. You love Mother Teresa so much? It's because you have that same potential in you. The saints we most admire had and gave the very gifts that are in us too. So this is what I mean by spiritual self-esteem. You think better of yourself. You think, oh, I have all this, but it's just potential that needs to be activated. And look, there are graces everywhere that are helping me get there. The title, Help of Christians, it said that Pope Pius V added this one to the litany after the Battle of Lepanto. In the 16th century, and this is where the Muslim forces had attacked Europe to take it over, and there was a victory of Christians over Muslims, and they were pushed back, and it was associated with one of the titles of Mary, which is Our Lady of Perpetual Help. Now, you'll see her picture on page 131 of our book. The one on the cover is something like it, but this is a very specific one. It's very famous. Everybody has seen this some other time. But there's something very charming in the picture if you look at it. So look at the feet of Jesus. And on his right foot, there's a sandal. On his left foot, the sandal is falling off. Do you see that? Okay. So what happened was suddenly two angels appeared showing him his fate. You see the angel holding a cross? You will be crucified. And on the other side, these are instruments of torture. So he saw his fate, and he jumped up into his mother's arms, and one of his shoes started to fall off. That's Mary, our refuge, when we confront our fate. It's the cradling experience of the divine feminine. And by the way, this particular one, since it's associated with a battle and all, I try to show, especially here on page 130, second paragraph, the hero, like hero in battle, is not the person who conquers others, but the one who unites and reconciles them. The heroic journey is an evolution from the solo operating style of the ego to fellowship and interdependence. Such respect for life is the foundation of adult love. Interdependence is the key to caring about others because our own self-interest has become equal to theirs. Compassion then becomes unconditional and universal in its reach. That is the reach of Mary, Helper of All Humanity. I changed the title from Help of Christians to Help of All Humanity. Everybody follow? And you may find this interesting a little further down on the page. And I heard this on the news and then looked it up and then I put it here in this chapter. On April 24th each year, which was just recently, a striking example of one of these reconciling forces has been evident in the action of the Armenian community in Los Angeles. They give blood at the local blood bank to be used by any citizen, Armenian, or Turk, in commemoration of the Holocaust that took place on April 24, 1915, when the Turks were committing genocide against the Armenians. They were shedding the blood of the Armenians. In response, the Armenians now give blood to help Turks, fellow enemy. They choose to shed their blood willingly, as they once were forced to shed it. They give life to those who took it away from them. This is a symbolic reversal of tyranny and hate in favor of generous giving. It's also an admirable example of choosing reconciliation over retaliation. So that would be the style of the Great Mother. How could we find a style of reconciling with others rather than retaliating? And to answer that, I went to the book Stride Toward Freedom by Martin Luther King. This is the gift that President Trump gave to Pope Francis yesterday. Because Pope Francis is an admirer of Martin Luther King, on page 128. And he proposes nonviolence in the face of conflict. It's a way of life for courageous people. An active resistance to evil, but in nonviolent ways. It seeks to win friendship and understanding. And the end result is redemption and reconciliation. The purpose of nonviolence, this is a quote from Martin Luther King, is the creation of the beloved community. A description of the Holy Trinity, the beloved community. Nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people. Nonviolence recognizes that evildoers are also victims and are not evil people. These are all quotes from him. The nonviolent resistor seeks to defeat evil, not people. Nonviolence holds that suffering can educate and transform. Nonviolence accepts suffering without retaliation. Unearned suffering is redemptive and has tremendously enlightening and transforming possibilities. Nonviolence chooses love instead of hate. Nonviolence resists violence of the spirit as well as of the body. Nonviolent love is spontaneous, unmotivated, non-selective, unselfish, unconditional, and creative. Nonviolence believes that the universe is on the side of justice. The nonviolent resistor has deep faith that justice will eventually win. Finally, nonviolence believes that God is a God of justice. So it goes back to our first title, Mirror of Justice. The last title goes with the first one. Yeah.
Did you say the Pope gave that to President Trump or President Trump?
Vice versa.
Well, President Trump.
President Trump gave that to the special copy of Martin Luther King's works to the Pope. And the Pope gave him the encyclical on ecology. Which he said he definitely would read. And I guess our time is about up, but I just wanted to, and we've completed what we wanted to talk about, but thank you all for your wonderful attention, and I see all of us in the arms of the Great Mother. So we're going to end with a short prayer, and I hope that you'll continue with the retreat to Mary in the appendix. Harriet? So if you'd like to close your eyes, Harriet will read the closing prayer.
Rose of all my life, I trust you with my past, present, and future. You are the promise of a renewal of the cosmos that begins today and will recycle throughout all time. You are the flower of opening and the flower of closing. You bloom in my heart, and I can feel myself expanding. You bring the thorns that help me become stronger. You show me how to accept the cycles of change. May I trust the changes that happen and grow through every one of them. May I bring the rose of you to everyone I know. May I find the mystical rose of you in my heart, in nature, in all my fellow humans. May I bring the rose of you to all who wander in this garden and may not notice its beautiful blooms. Be the gardener of what will next bloom for me. Help me blossom into Christ in the world, mystical rose. Amen.
Amen. Thank you all.
Once again, thank you, Dave, for your grace. And we are going to remember to say our word in life prayers to the Blessed Mother in hopes that Syria will have some peace. See you in September.